Good morning, America. This is the Katz Roundtable. John Katzimatidis here. It's Sunday morning. What's going on in the world? Well, we have somebody that really knows what's going on. Now we have former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. He was Secretary of State. He was CIA director. He was number one in his class at West Point. One smart guy. And he's got his eye and his ear to the ground. Good morning, Mr. Secretary. How are you this morning?
I'm very good this morning, John. Thank you for having me on the show again.
Russia, whom do we trust more? Is Putin going to do the wrong thing or the right thing, or is Biden going to do the wrong thing or the right thing?
Well, I'm always rooting for President Biden to be successful and America to be successful. I hope he'll get the right end of the stick on this thing. We saw this past week Putin and his team talk about actually moving Russian military. It sounded like actual combat troop forces into Cuba or to Venezuela or both. I think this shows that he doesn't have respect for President Biden and for American resolve. I think he believes that he can use coercive pressure to take things that aren't his, denying people their sovereign rights all across the world. We saw it in Belarus. In Kazakhstan, we saw it in Armenia and Azerbaijan, where they were in conflict. And of course, we see it in southeast Ukraine today. He took Crimea, a fifth of Ukraine, under President Obama's watch. I fear that he thinks he can walk all over peace-loving people and people who love the rule of law and freedom under President Biden as well.
And you feel that he's not going to do anything stupid on Putin's end in the Ukraine, or you feel comfortable on that, or?
Well, I mean, I think, John, I think your point's well taken. It's not likely to be the case that you'll see big, huge, heavy divisions roll all the way into the Ukrainian capital. That's a little bit of a stretch. And the Ukrainians will fight, and they're pretty capable warriors as well. So it'll look more like the things we've seen before. It'll be cyber attacks, which we saw this week in Ukraine. It'll be little green men and small troops. It'll be political coercion and using financial resources to coerce people. So, yes, I think that's the model. But in the end, he'll achieve the thing that he very much wants, which is to exert political control over the entire region around him and ultimately expand it into further reaches of the West, of Western Europe as well.
Where do you want to go from here? Iran? Anything going on in Iran?
Well, lots going on in Iran. But lots going on outside of Iran because of the Iranians. I think this week the world arose to watch the Iranians have proxy forces actually fire rockets on America in our embassy in Baghdad. Wasn't reported that much, but you had Americans attacked by Iranian proxies in an administration, in President Biden's administration, that was sitting at the negotiating table with this very same Iranians trying to cut a deal with them. That is bizarre to think that you'd have your soldiers under attack, your diplomats under attack, and you'd be trying to sit with our diplomats someplace else in Europe. And then we've seen, too, the administration begin to head down a path where they're going to give what will end up being $5, $10, $20 billion of economic benefit to the Iranians in exchange for a deal that's almost certain to give Iran a path to a nuclear weapon, putting Israel at risk, our Gulf state friends at risk, and ultimately the United States at risk as well.
Now, the next big item that's going on in the Pacific, and everybody's very concerned about it, it's these new hypersonic missiles that North Korea is playing with, and the hypersonic missiles that that China is going with. And I understand these things are travel at a mile a second, every second, 1 mile.
Yeah. So these are multiple. That's exactly right, John. We have multiple countries now that have advanced their hypersonic capabilities. The two folks that have really gone the furthest and are the most capable are the Russians and the Chinese. The Chinese now have a variant of this that apparently can maintain orbit and then come down to the Earth at their direction at the time that they chose. It is possible. They've not done it yet. It's possible that one fine time they'll decide to put a nuclear capability on that technology as well, really destabilizing for the world. The United States was behind. We began the effort to catch up during the Trump administration. We have to make sure that we have a world-class capability that can maintain the nuclear deterrent that the United States has been at the center of protecting the world from these kinds of proliferation and nuclear risks for so long.
How long before we catch up, Mr. Secretary?
Depends how much we invest. But it's a handful of years before we can get to something that looks and feels like true parity. Look, we have lots of systems that are pretty capable today. I can't say everything about them. I think the Chinese and Russians know that. They're not in a position yet where they can put us at a true risk, hold us at true risk. But we have to make sure that we're doing the right thing and establishing a model which can both defend the United States from nuclear attack and then deter others from conducting such an attack. I've got a long article that I've written I'm going to publish here in the next couple of weeks that will talk just about that, how we should think about a world in which you now have a Russian and a Chinese nuclear capability, very different from the times when President Reagan was negotiating with just the Russians.
Very different, very different. Where would you like to go from here? We talked about Russia, we talked about China, we talked North Korea, Iran.
And the other thing, John, that's going on that I think we should all be watching is that in just a handful of weeks, there'll be an Olympic Games. We all love the Olympics. My mother took me to watch Carl Lewis run. It was amazing. I remember it in my childhood. And we grew up in Southern California in the Coliseum. But we now are having an Olympics held in a country that is currently holding a million or more people in camps that look kind of like what was happening in Germany in the 1930s, where they're forcing women to be sterilized and taking people away from their families. And that's where we're going to send our athletes, to this surveillance state that's conducting genocide. I've talked about this as being the genocide Olympics. And I worry, just so that's geopolitics, that's rewarding Xi Jinping, that's bad enough. But I really worry we're going to have young athletes there, some of whom have protested about Tibet, some of whom have talked about Xinjiang. And those, who knows how the Chinese will respond if one of our young people or a young person from some other country decides to say what they really think about the Chinese Communist Party. They've held people in detention for much less. I pray that the surveillance state, which will catch every word that every one of our athletes speaks while they're on the ground there and everything that they do, I pray that that surveillance state is smart enough not to decide that they want to take an American and not let them return home when these games are over because of them doing what's fundamentally in their best interest, which is speaking their mind. We always tell our kids to say what they believe and to fight for the things they believe while they're inside of China. They need to be very careful.
I also understand that the Chinese are now working very closely with the Pakistanis, exchanging a lot of different things. And the Pakistanis' job is to keep the Taliban under control. What do you hear from that side of the world?
So there's been a longstanding relationship between China and Pakistan. It has mostly been one where the Chinese have underwritten Pakistan's economic problems, so they've made big loans to Pakistan. And John, we and I've talked about this before. When China makes a big loan to a country, it's got an interest rate and a repayment system, but more importantly, there's a huge political cost associated with that, and so increased control of China over Pakistan. It is the case that Pakistan, for an awfully long time, has played footsie too much with terrorists in the region. There's times that they've put the lid on the Taliban. There were times when the Pakistanis were very helpful, frankly, to us in trying to reduce the risk to Americans in Afghanistan. But the Pakistanis need to understand that terrorism comes in lots of flavors, and that is a very, very dangerous game to play too closely with those terrorists. And doing it alongside the Chinese presents greater risk to the Pakistani people than when the Pakistanis are making those decisions on their own.
Well, I also understand with the Chinese lending money, they're also lending money to places in South America and in Africa. And in Brooklyn, they used to call it loan to own. In other words, you loan the money, they're not going to pay you back, so you're going to own it.
Yes, this is the Chinese financial model. These aren't private loans. These aren't a loan from your regional bank or the Bank of New York. This is a state-sponsored, state-subsidized loan. It is made with a political purpose, and it is made in the expectation that when they don't repay, you'll ask for something. You need the most public, biggest example happened in Sri Lanka, where the Sri Lankans took on a loan that they had no repay. And when that time came and the default occurred, The Sri Lankans handed over a significant piece of their most important port, giving the Chinese another place to put their navy and to put their commercial vessels and gain massive political influence inside of Sri Lanka and in that particular region of the world.
Wow. I mean, this is...
Yeah, loan to own. You got it.
Loan to own, and this is international chess they're playing. I mean, I think I saw that in the James Bond movie one time.
Yes.
Tell me, we have a couple minutes left. What else would you like to tell the American people?
Continue to pay attention to what's taking place at America's southern border. We've seen now in New York them talking about non-citizens voting. We've seen in California a decision by the governor there to allow non-citizens to illegal immigrants to receive medical care at the cost of the citizens of the United States, citizens of California, and their taxpayer money to receive free health care. We have essentially an open border on our south today, and that presents enormous risk, not only from illegal immigrants traveling across, but bad guys who want to do us harm, and fentanyl and drugs coming across the border in volumes that we haven't seen in an awfully long time in the United States. We have lots going on here, John, but I always remind people that the most important thing that we have to do to maintain our sovereignty is secure our borders, and that's simply not taking place under the Biden administration along the U.S.-Mexican border.
So America is under attack in many, many ways.
John, I think that's fair to say that the risk and the peril are real.
Secretary Pompeo, thank you so much for coming on. By the way, tomorrow is Martin Luther King.
Yes, happy Martin Luther King Day to everyone.
And, recorded a few of my friends, and they said to me that if Martin Luther King was around today, he'd be very disappointed in what's going on in America.
I think that's true.
Mike Pompeo, thank you for everything you've done for America and continue to speak out for America. God bless you and God bless America.
Thank you. God bless you too, John. Have a wonderful day.
You too.